This is a very short poem, so hope you don't miss it. It's called Blood is Thicker Than Water. I want to choose my words from a strong family so that my pen might draw blood, but instead I am surrounded by mute acquaintances and the ink runs a bit thin.
Thank you, Grant. Our second reader tonight is John McNally, our Wood Foundation.
First one's a short one. It's an anonymous one off the internet. It was posted as a kid's poem, but I really just think it sums up the human condition, so this is not mine, it's anonymous. It's called Bear. There once was a bear who had purple hair, that's rare. So Bob attacked him. So I think that says a lot about humans. This is Austereopath. I was walking down the Promenade Bray before the Christmas tsunami washed it away, when halfway down it caught my gaze, a half-financed, half-hours repair on a concrete graze. A fix not returning to as new, almost signed, that will do, a half-message now that rang more true. A message today, austerity ruins all of us, you can cover the cracks, but they're still glaringly obvious. As in the Celtic Tiger, fractures apparent, plastic paddy, Joycean parody. Do you want a mortgage? Yes. 110%? Oh, yes. And a car? Yes. Yes. And furniture? Ooh, and are you terribly rich and sophisticated? Yes. 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 Oh, God, yes. And then the bubble burst. Those fractures again. And beside the botched cover-up, in yellow tarred letters, for everyone to know and answer to every question. And all it said was, no.
Thank you, John. Next we have Edward O'Dwyer.
This one's called Observations in the Cafe. I'm observing a man I'd assume in his 50s. He is observing a young woman, definitely no more than mid-20s. She is working at her laptop and perhaps making observations of her own as he, again I'm assuming, considers her laptop in relation to his. She gives no indication she is aware she's being observed. If she is aware, she gives no indication, I would imagine, because this isn't anything new to her. She is as beautiful as any woman on a magazine cover. He can't be aware he is being observed. He hasn't so much as glanced elsewhere. If he knew, I guess he wouldn't care. The lady behind the counter is perhaps observing all of this. I don't think she'd think much of it. She observes such things 5 days a week, and she isn't paid anyway for observations. She made this cappuccino, sold her that fruit smoothie and him his pot of tea, ignored as the wife I'm assuming is at home and won't be made love to tonight. I'm noticing the time on my wrist when I realize I'm to be somewhere else. I fail to distract the man's stare as I swing my coat over my shoulders, ready myself for the November streets. This does get a momentary glance from the beautiful young woman, however. She observes that I'm leaving the cafe, but it's nothing more. It isn't the observation I was hoping for, but I am content with it, to have existed in her observations between whatever other observations. Even a fleeting moment in such a woman's thoughts may do immeasurable good for a man. If you can imagine if ice cream existed and then suddenly didn't exist. This is called The End of Ice Cream. When they stopped producing ice cream, I was already an old man, without any more need or desire for it. I could look back on a lifetime of ice cream, and not always in moderation, as any good thing should be. A lifetime of savoring its immaculate coolness on summer afternoons that may or may not have been sunny. Those many rainy days in Junes and Julys when the volume of the band's chimes nearing was equally music as on sweltering ones. A hard and underwhelming life all the same. Now the slog is all in the past, and I've learned the secrets of contentment that age and work and disappointment teach. I don't miss it. I've no use today for it, and the ice cream of my youth, I know now I never needed either, that its value was something I always misunderstood anyway. I can taste any flavor of it still, at any moment, closing my eyes, remembering, but I haven't done in years. I've learned that even the best things can become something else, or they were never intended to be. That luxury can become greed. That taste can become tastelessness. That love can become ordinary if it is too plentiful. I'm sure those that do miss it are many. Maybe call it the day the world became impossibly bleak. I'm sure, though, they're better off now, without it, looking hopefully into their empty bowls. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Edward. And next we have Rob
Urquhart.
And keep it to one, everybody, just running out of time.
It's okay, I should have
started recording.
I've only got
half
a dozen, right?
Spare us, please.
Well,
half a dozen, two dozen.
Let's see. I do have Two of Haggis by Robbie Burns, but it's a bit early for that, so. forgive me if I seem ignorant to anybody. I'm half deaf. I have wax in my ear and I can hardly hear them, but I was in down in Westcott for my holidays for the new year. We had Hogmanay and Castletown there. The west awash. The wave throws the cliff face back at itself, chipping and grinding. Pieces of cyst and flint rolled and spun together with force and flung, hitting, cracking, splitting and sparking, red light then green, gold and incandescent blue. Rebounding, mixing, becoming liquid, becoming particle, finite, molecular, phantasmal. Kinetic flame licks cliff base, lightning, flickers, reflect, fissure, tunnel, and vein. Thunderhead breaks overhead. The already wet becomes waterlogged. Runnels and rivulets swell and flood. Hillside shifts, cliff face, frowns, then slowly, then more quickly starts to slip, to fall down 10,000 tons of soil and rock with half a field and a wall on top gone, drowned.
Thank you, Raph. That's very dramatic. And next we have Charles Clark.
A colleague of mine once said to a clever class that Confucius was an ancient Greek philosopher. And Demosthenes was not an ancient Chinese orator. This is called Demosthenes on Isis, Isis being the name for the Thames as it passes Oxford. Demosthenes on Isis, shaking the gravel from his voice, refreshed by the chilly waters, he dried himself on Charybdis' banks, From old habit, he had addressed his audience, pensive willows in shimmering sunlight. Exiled, unheard in the Agora, far from Athens and Macedonian memories, he reproved the folly of the times, the decay of learning, the easy tolerances. Resuming, he swung his punt with the Terence stream and drifted skillfully to Folly Bridge.
Thank you, Charles. And next we have Patricia Walsh. Thank you, Susan. This is called Hairspring. To the ends of the earth I would follow you, knocking at the door or window pane, not to be let in but to acknowledge, to spare at least one is insane. While all the time not wondering, while not scraping deeper still, while dreams and heart's imagination move on the mind for a kill. If only to view the labyrinth as opposed to the skyline of Hades, and check the opacity of fables served from our afternoon tables, and the pallor of our newborn babies, because one's affliction is only a myth, so the hard one ends letting lunatics have trouble, standing still as an example on your plans. Thanks, Patricia. And next, from all the way from Canada, Karen McCartan.
So yeah, sure enough, I was in Montreal there for the last 3 months, and cool to be back. It was kind of a challenging time in lots of ways, but it was a great time as well. But I got two gifts, and there were two French poems. It's about fun. See you later. Vivez, tombez, et il m'a pris aussi. Je ne sais quoi c'est, mais en voit le voici. Les gens des gens sont essais. Ils sont froids du corps et d'esprit. Je pensais que j'étais solitaire, mais encore jamais. J'étais pas solitaire. Non, j'avais faim. Et j'ai faim pour quelqu'un comme tu. Merci beaucoup.
Thank you, Karen. And now, from somebody who hasn't been here for a long time, Simon Deasy.
Another defeat for the minimum wagers. A queue moves Odie Clay until it feels right to Odie that he should say something. Large coffee, please. Anything else for that boy? No, that's it. Odie pays a third of what he earns in an hour and then stands back. By Odie's right side, two girls are smiling at a snow globe that one of them is shaking. And by his right, a man is speaking to the white grey scarf around his neck.
Yep, yep, yep. And you're in that position because of me, you know. It is because of me that you are there. Yeah. Come on. We'll have a chai latte together and talk it out.
The insane are great, and not just in number. There's coffee?
Yeah,
Odie says, stepping forward. The blonde woman passes Odie a black and white striped mug and takes his receipt. Takeaway, Odie says.
George!
The woman shouts, staring at the cup. Odie leans forward and watches the cup and waits.
George!
The woman shouts again before lifting the cup up and carrying it to a bathtub sink, where she puts the cup down and then glasses a wall of flowering cardboard petals.
Take away, George! Take away!
Petals are as afraid of us as they should be. The woman pours and then swings around again, saying, "George!" once more to the back of the man against the till. His head is down and he is pressing. "There you go, takeaway. So sorry about that now," the woman says, her eyes trying to communicate more by flickering and rolling out an epileptic dance. "That was my fault, not his," Odie says, pointing straight at George. "What? Listen, I'm very sorry, but you should be. You shouldn't be so rude to your staff. I forgot to say takeaway. You should be sorry. That was my fault, not his." George's head is lower as if he is about to lick the faces of the notes looking up at him. Odie's finger is still and still pointing at George. Neither George or Odie seem to know what to do next, though George is attempting to continue, but he cannot, as his conscious mind has never learned the symbols beneath his fingers that have been embedded by his repetition into at best his subconscious and at worst his unconscious mind. But both men are conscious now, and they are lost. Odie lifts the paper cup up and brings it to a cut column with sugar sachets and arrow straight twigs and a black hole. He grips three sachets, rips their tops off, pours, and then stirs. The woman is saying sorry to George, although George already knows what Odie is just coming to know. George was a woman punched in the street by her man, and I was the dumb passerby, dumb enough to hit the man back. Odie realizes that he has spilt coffee onto one of his black fingerless gloves. He puts a lid on, secures it, and then walks by a moving cube. Faces stare out, each with the expression of a murderer's mother. Odie sees a tiny microphone pinned to a silver scarf, and then for a moment it is that morning again when, driven by cold, Odie takes a shortcut from Washington Street's end to the start of Hanna, through the aisles of St. Augustine's Church, where, carrying a coffee cup, he goes by row after row of standing people who seem taller to Odie than people do in the street. There is one loud voice and then Odie's gone. On Panna, Odie sucks on his glove, adjudging karma to be a cup cracking under the weight of the complexity of all creation. Odie sees a snake that he then steps on. Two girls overtake Odie's steps. The insane are nowhere to be seen. The girl nearest to Odie trots on heels that are high beneath tight black denim. Her long black hair comes to the nape of her back, where a white shirt shows and draws a horizontal bow just below her belt. If she walks from there to the nearest coast, Odie Clay will follow for every single step, with that same smile upon his face, the smile that every man smiles maybe only once in a decade, the smile that is either utterly dumb or all-knowing. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. And next we have Mary O'Connell.
I was going to call this a senior moment, but it's like those times when you have something in your mind but you can't bring it out, and you're desperately trying to, and yet it's there, and you're hoping that it will be retrieved. It's called memory lapse. Words on a scheme of thought were once pulled out with ease whenever there was need. Their bounce and ricochet would trigger recognition, fire a responding glow. Now they fall like droplets through a sieve, merge to be flushed away, unless the wordsmith makes a last attempt to dredge them from the depths. Allow liquid to solidify, that slivers of evasive ice might be retrieved, slot back into their once familiar modes. Patience and belief may pull out what is stuck, restore those syllables that slipped the mind, and haul them back to thought.
Thank you, Mary. And next we have George.
May I inject some ridiculous into the Sublime Church. It's a jazz ditty, some other tune, 1920s. In old Savannah, yeah, I said Savannah, the weather there is nice and warm, the climate's of a southern brand, and here's what I don't understand. There is a pretty girl there, a pretty girl there. She's colder than an Arctic storm. She's got a heart just like a stone. Even icemen leave her alone. They call her Heart, Heart of Hannah, the Vamp of Savannah, the meanest gal in town. Leather is tough, but Hannah's heart is tougher. She's a gal who loves to see men suffer, to tease them, to thrill them, to torture them and kill them. Is her delight, they say. I saw her by the seaside with a great big pan. There was Hannah pouring water on a drowning man. She's hard-hearted Hannah, the vamp of Savannah Town. Second verse. You ought to see her. You ought to see her. Outside, she's soft as silk, Sheila. But socially, she's hard as nails. She's just a girl who hates the males. And when she's nasty, gee, she's nasty. She's about as sweet as sour milk. Nothing she likes better than feeding poison food to a man. They call her Hard-Hearted Hannah, the Vamp of Savannah, the meanest girl in town. Think of your cold, refrigerated mammas. Brother, she's a polar bear's pajamas. To tease them, to thrill them, to torture them and kill them is her delight, they say. An evening spent with Hannah in the old armchair is like sliding through Alaska in your underwear. She's hard-hearted Hannah, the Vamp of Savannah Town. Oh, yeah.
Very refreshing. And you know, speaking of Hannah, our Jennifer Matthews had a baby recently, and her name is Hannah, so maybe we should get a song about her. Okay, and we have Stanley next. Wherever Stanley is? Somewhere in the back?
Thank you, Susan. That's the last time I'd say put my name anywhere on the open mic night, because Jesus, George, what an act to follow. Anyway, mine's got a little bit of a musical theme as well. Again, what I do is I take song titles from a particular artist and I create a piece of work for that. Tonight I'm going to do a piece from Billy Bragg, who, having spoken to the carry man next to me at the bottom of the bar, I now realise I might have to explain who he actually is. Billy Bragg is an English singer-songwriter, been around since the early 80s. I've actually grown up with him. He's one of my favourite artists in the mid-80s, and I follow him all my life, and kind of he sees the world the same way I do, and we've lots of things in common, including socialism and love of our common land, and he has a very strong anti-war theme goes through his work as well, which is something I have a taste for as well. So these are song titles by Billy Bragg that I think portray his take on anti-war, but it certainly portrays mine anyway. In the end. Strange things happen on the home front when rumours of war appear on a distant shore. Rule, not reason, is everywhere. Fear is a man's best friend. Trust has no tender comrade. Ideology is reduced to which side are you on? And a lover sings, oh freedom, you make me brave. Some days I see the point in, oh freedom, you make me brave. But talk of this land is your land, a change is going to come and help save the youth of America, still sounds like an accident waiting to happen. It's life with the lions, I say, but the few can say, people get ready.
and in shore, wish you were here, is swiftly followed by, we'll sing their souls back home. But we won't talk about it. We're waiting for the great leap forwards, so we can get back to the old house, between the walls. Thank you.
Thank you, Stanley. And next we have the other Simon.
Well, I had a number of choices of what to do, but rather than be forlorn and mournful, this is something I wrote at a club, and there's a very heavy beat, a booming bass, it's boiling hot, and there are a lot of people. It's called The Beat. The beat. Feel the beat. Feel its jelly to your feet. The body shakes, vibrates. Freedom faces in the crowds, swept up by music from the street. Feel the beat, the beat. Feel the beat, the bass will make you tremble, more than just the heart strings. The fear that takes up wings, the freedom of the free flow, the candy not too sweet. To be through, not just see through, and ride the cresting wave, the thermal rising in the heat, and then all of it floods through you as you feel the beat, the beat. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. And now to close the evening, we have Pascal.
Tonight. I can't remember the name of this one, but you'll understand why when it is finished. Doctor, doctor, I needs must tell you, I think I'm suffering from amnesia. How long have you been like that? How long have you been like what?
Thank you, Pascal. There's time actually for one more, if anybody wants to do one. Longer one if you want to? No? Okay, on that note.
He's forgotten them all.
Yeah, Simon? Okay, Simon wants to do one more. So one more. Here's from Simon.
This is one I wrote a while ago about divorce, but trying to take a positive look at it. And it's called Divorce Because I'm Worth It. There is a position in litigation unique, face-saving decisions pressured through peak. My advisors insist from the battle long fought, to give in, not resist, is not play as one ought. It's not just the money, the hate makes it worse. It's really quite funny, borders on the perverse. The things we've collected, gifts or chosen by both, low values, infected, that's easy to loathe. The decanter I gave you, we were destined to be. Times change that we move through, you want to be free. Feelings are stunted, misshapen, deformed. The story is recounted, the truth is reformed. The strategies crippling, all our circles involved, the planet realignment, and nothing's resolved. Orbits must settle to a new status quo, suns rising and setting, their way they must go. Our progeny pawns in games I won't play. When sanity dawns, I wait for that day.